Welcome to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. You are listening to an expert talk from November 2018. Ms. Sophie Marter, Material Futurist by Ovation, presents Re-engineering Textile, Avoiding Microplastics.
Good morning, everybody. Oh, gosh. Okay, coming out nice and loudly. Well, great to see everybody here today. I'm going to be talking to you about re-engineering textiles and avoiding microfibers. And really today, I'm kind of wearing two hats. So I'll be presenting from some work that I started way back in 2016. And as we go through the presentation, I'll also be introducing the work of the Outdoor Microfiber Consortium, which we formed last year to really tackle this issue. And then open to questions and things at the end. So if we look at kind of what I'm going to cover, very much like a lot of other speakers that have been speaking about microplastics and microfibers, I really want to start with that definition. Because when we talk about engineering, we can't really engineer if we don't really know what we're talking about. So I think repetition is good here, and I think we've all got a slightly different way that we're going to be approaching it. And then I'm also going to talk about how the goalposts have moved and how they've moved really quite considerably in the last short time. And then the approaches that we can take, and then I will be introducing the infographic, which is for me what I see as a kind of an engineering map. So if you're a bit of a textile geek, I think you'll come along with me, and it's really quite fun to kind of understand how it all maps together. And then at the end, as I said, I'm going to introduce the work of the Outdoor Microfiber Consortium and how we're actually approaching tackling textile engineering and things as well. Okay, so when we start to look at the definition, all the other speakers that I've been listening to, we've all said the same things. It's very complex and it's misunderstood. I think if we look at the term microfibers in the true technical sense as textile engineers and things, we define it as a synthetic fiber finer than one denier or Desitex, having a diameter of less than 10 micrometers. So that's a very, very specific technical term, and it's something that we're all very familiar with, the suppliers that we work with are all very familiar with. But this term has been used as a very blanket term over a big industry challenge. And I think what we need to do is we need to break that down further and look at the different components within it. So I really see it as three stages. We've got microplastics, which are the biggest pieces, and as we've seen from other speakers, less than five millimetre in size. And microplastics come from all sorts of different industries. So they come from the automotive industry, so as we've heard before, come from car tyres, they come from personal care, so that the microbeads that we find in cosmetics. They come from the chemical industry as nurdles and pellets. And then they also come from the clothing industry. And that's where we move over to the smaller sizes, where we start to talk about microfibers. And I think one of the misconceptions here as well is, you know, when we look back to that original technical definition and we see that it's a synthetic fiber, when we're talking about this topic, we're actually referring to natural and synthetics. So that's really quite confusing, you know, to start with. And also what we're finding is that not all of the loss that comes from clothing is actually a microfiber. So a microfiber is actually relatively straightforward because we know it has a certain diameter, it's relatively uniform in its structure. What we actually are finding is that we're getting much smaller pieces, which are the microfragments. And where the difficulty is there is they're generally irregular in size and in form, and much, much smaller. So much harder to kind of define what's coming out there. So I think really just to kind of level set that kind of understanding of what we mean, you know, where you've got the technical definition and then you've got the realistic what's happening. So when we go a little bit more detail about the microfragments and the microfibers, this is something that really brought me into this topic. Kind of in 2016, I suppose as a kind of geeky textile person, I really wanted to understand this a little bit more. And a lot of the conversation at the time was about fleece fabrics, which are looser constructions, generally brushed. Fibers can come out relatively easily through, you know, well, compared to as they break off. So microfibers are pulling out, primarily driven by fabric structure. But when you actually look at microfragments, there's a little bit more complexity to it. So these are parts that are actually breaking off in one way or another. It occurs during the consumer wash and wear. It's accelerated by various different triggers as well. And I think when we start to get an understanding of different fabrics, structures, and constructions that we're actually using, this to me is really quite an interesting thing for us to understand is, you know, are the things that we're finding coming out of our clothes fibers, or are they actually fragments? Because that will really help us understand what we need to do again with regards to the fabric engineering. So as far as the goalposts, in 2016, when I first started working on this, it was a relatively low challenge. You know, there was a few pods of people that were working on it. But in the last couple of years, we've seen it move to what I would see as a medium to high risk challenge, very much covered by media activity, NGOs getting involved. So really escalating as far as urgency of understanding and what we actually need to do. Also in 2016, the work very much started from the outdoor brands, obviously connected more to the environment, really wanting to understand this. But in the last few years, we've really seen quite an accelerated engagement by home and fashion brands as well. And that's really important, again, for our learning, because we've got a diversity of material types, different supply bases, and it really helps us to understand the challenge perhaps a little bit easier. Again, we started with a very much a marine-focused challenge. You know, people talking, as we saw from the previous speaker, concerns about, you know, fish in the ocean, what it's doing environmentally in our oceans. But as we start to understand more, you know, even though it feels like it's getting more complex, we understand that this isn't purely just a marine issue, but we know that microfibers are actually released in the air, so we come into air pollution and inhalation risks, and also land pollution as well. So this becomes this very holistic kind of total environmental issue. So not just the marine. The marine is bad, very bad. But when we start to look at it as this holistic issue, then the solutions that we're actually providing also become a little bit different, because we're not purely looking at how we stop fibers from washing out, but we're looking at how we stop fibers coming out completely. Also, when we started, the conversation was very much geared towards synthetics. But from recent work, or a lot of kind of recent work that's coming out, we know that this is actually something that affects natural fibers, manufactured cellulosics, and synthetics. And I think, you know, the challenge that we have at the moment is really understanding the impact from all those different fiber types and different compositions. You know, the conversation started on fleece fabrics because it seemed very visual, it seemed very obvious. But I think now, from the amount of testing that a number of different organizations have done, we know that it affects all fabrics, to varying different levels. And I think, you know, as the BSI Textile Mission Project presented last night, is, you know, some of the learnings that we're getting are really actually quite surprising. You know, it's not the obvious culprits that are always giving us the results that we expect. And I think, you know, what we need to do is make sure that those surprising results are consistent, so we can actually make informed decisions off them. In the beginning, people were looking at ways that we could capture and filter. There was a lot of conversation about what are the wastewater treatment people doing? What are the laundry and the kind of washing machine suppliers doing? Can we capture it? Can we filter it? And that's great. But I think we also need to look at how we look at product development as a solution as well. And I think a forum like this, where we've got lots of brands and retailers, we've got product developers, you know, I think it's everybody's responsibility. And I'll talk more of this as we go through. But it's not a case of just pushing the blame to somebody else and saying out of sight, out of mind. But I think if we work in the textile industry, whatever our role is, we have to identify what is our part to play and how are we going to do that and how are we going to connect to the right people. We've also seen a move from purely academic research and now looking at ways that we can transition that academic research into, you know, product developers. Because I think, you know, we're very good at looking at that very strong academic research, and we couldn't do this without that. But there seems to me to be a void between how we translate that to people that then need to develop product. I wouldn't imagine that many product developers here today could really take, you know, a stack of academic papers and really understand exactly what that means for their new collection that they're putting together. So there's sometimes that kind of grey area between how we translate one thing into another. And then in the beginning, there was no standardized integrity. And I think we were seeing a lot of people doing a very good job of, you know, producing the methodologies that they actually required to get their research done. But what we're seeing now is, you know, that lack of standardization is making it very difficult for the industry to actually push forwards with some consistent approach. So now, 2018, we're in a position where a lot of the test methods are now starting to align. So there's been a considerable amount of work to actually get that alignment in place. So if we look at the approaches, you know, we could see the first part here up at the top is very much about measuring. So a lot of environmentalists, different industries, really trying to get a sense of what their impact is. And that's very important because unless you can measure it, you can't really make a change. And so that was really, really important. But I really see that as a kind of the top part of, you know, what needs to happen here. We then moved down to an approach that was more, you know, as I said before, about capturing, you know, how can we filter it out? You know, can we shift the blame to wastewater treatment people? Can we say it's their responsibility? I mean, to modify a wastewater plant costs multi-millions, and you think how many wastewater plants we have globally. You know, realistically, that's not always going to be a possibility. And then we see some great work going on in the laundering industry, whether it's drop-in technologies that can go into the washing machine to actually capture your fibres while you're doing your domestic washing, or whether it's actually something that's applied by the manufacturer as a kind of a built-in filter. You know, these are all great. And I think what we're seeing here is kind of a portfolio approach. You know, I don't think there's one thing that really is the holy grail of what we actually need to do as a combined industry. But really what I've been driving from right from the beginning is working towards ways that we can prevent it from the start. And I think that's where we can all play our part. You know, we're textile people. You know, we work with the supply chain. We are the supply chain, some of us I can see in the audience. And it's our responsibility to find ways that we can actually start to reduce and ultimately eliminate from the start. I think one thing that really drives me to that is knowing that, you know, we ship so much used product to developing countries where they don't have the same infrastructure that we have. Our ocean is connected. You know, we don't have a line between us. So if we're shipping old product to other countries that have a less of an infrastructure than we do, all we're doing is enabling microfibers to get into the oceans from another part. So really, you know, this always drives me back to the kind of how do we actually engineer things differently to prevent it from the start. And we're not going to capture everything. And that's why I think this portfolio approach across here is really important for us to take on. So, blimey, the colour's really bright there. Yeah, so when I started to work with a lot of people, I was going into conversations where people were so confused. There was a lot of fear, there was a lot of denial. We saw marine biologists doing a fantastic job, but they were trying to do the job in some places of understanding complex textile issues. And, you know, we need marine people to understand what's happening at the marine level. We need textile people to understand what's happening at the textile area. We also saw textile people trying to understand what happens with white goods and washing machines. Yeah, that's great. But again, can we take that expertise back to the area that we all know about and really identifying where we need to play our part? So this diagram was just really the noise that was going on. We saw lots of overlapping areas. We saw lots of parts of the puzzle needing to come together, but no real kind of systematic approach as to kind of how that would happen. So you can see, I don't know if I can point, but you can see you've got the consumer part of it, you've got social environmental, you've got how do we actually colour the fabric, how do we finish it, you know, what happens with regards to the raw materials. So lots of parts that need to speak to each other. But in those early stages, there was no way that it was really able to speak to each other. So that moves us on to an infographic that we put together in the early stages, really to help kind of demystify this and make it easier for people to approach this topic. Because unless we can actually demystify that complexity, we're not going to be able to put our resources behind actually making a difference and making that change that we needed. So this infographic was put together to help navigate people through what they needed to understand and work out who they needed to work to. So I'll just spend a few minutes to kind of explain how this works and then take you through it step by step. So really what we've got in the middle is we've got a product. We've got a t-shirt or whatever you want, a garment, it could be a pair of shoes, it could be any product. But basically what you've got there is you've got various different levels from raw materials all the way through to coloration and finishing. And it really just demonstrates that in any of the products that we're wearing, in any of the clothing that you've got on, there's so many elements that have to be thought about. There's so many different stakeholders that play their part. Unless we can understand what's happened right across those, it's very difficult for us to kind of make change. And I think a good example of this is some of the early research that came out spoke very much about X number of fibres came out and it was acrylic, for example. But no context to what was the fabric structure, how it had been coloured, how it had been finished. So for me as a textile person, my geekiness wanted to get in and really understand what was that fabric spec and what happened. So I think if we can start to change the understanding and the way that people communicate this, it really helps us to break this down a little bit. So with the product in the middle, then the circles, the coloured circles that go directly around that T-shirt are all the ones that I would consider that are directly related to the textile industry. And then what I've put out to the left-hand side here is the ones that are related but not necessarily under our particular specialty area. So you've got the laundry industry, which covers things like washing machine manufacturers, detergent manufacturers, how the user actually interacts, so, you know, the temperature of their wash, the time of their wash, etc. So you've got the laundering industry, you've got the wastewater treatment industry, and then you've got the social and environmental part, which could be anybody from, you know, marine biologists to people that are actually working in that environmental sector. So they're all very, very important to what we're doing, but they're not necessarily ones that us as the textile industry need to be working on ourselves, because we know that there's experts that are already working on those. Also, what you can see around the outside is you've got a blue line that goes all the way around the outside and directly goes into the wastewater blue circle here. And that denotes that we are not just getting microfiber loss at the consumer level. So when we put things in the washing machine, when we wash and wear ourselves, fibers are coming out. But we also know that fibers are coming out during manufacture. And that is, you know, that's a pretty big issue in itself and something that we need to get a better handle on. So you can see all the way from raw materials, all the way through fiber production, yarn, fabric, color, finish, garment construction, etc. There's going to be fiber loss during manufacturing at all those levels. Some processes obviously being much higher than others. So it's really for us to understand where along there we're getting the greatest impact. So what I'm going to do now is I'm just going to break this down a little bit further and just go bit by bit around the infographic. So if we start with raw materials, you can see the red circle here actually highlighted for the raw materials that we're using. I've highlighted their natural, synthetic and regenerated cellulosics. You can also see on the right-hand side the icons for finite materials, renewable and recycled, because I think that has become quite a big part of looking and understanding what raw materials go into this. We're increasingly using more and more recycled fibres into our products, and I think one of the question marks that was raised a little while ago was, are we actually contributing more or less to the microfiber issue through using recycled fibres? That's something that we're actually looking at the moment to try and get a much clearer handle on what's actually happening there. As far as research that's gone on so far, we've got a lot of information about the synthetic landscape. So if you think way back to 2016, where I say a lot of the work actually started on synthetics, we started a lot of work in those early stages that now we're starting to get some feedback on, we're starting to get some results through on. So I'd say from the synthetic side, we've got a much stronger understanding of what's actually happening. And I think what happened in the early stages is, rightly or wrongly, there was a lot of knee-jerk reaction that said, well, obviously, you know, natural fibres are biodegradable, not a problem, therefore we're not going to be so concerned about it. And I think it's only recently that we start to see the academic papers coming through giving information about the detrimental effects of natural fibres as well, that really, you know, that there's more interest in that area as well. But I think as far as, you know, looking at the long-term kind of agenda here, I think what we need to do is make sure that we've got a full understanding of all fibre types that go into this, but also the effect of those fibre types with other manufacturing processes as well. And as we go around the infographic, that will become clear. So then we move on to fibre, so spun versus filament. And from the BCI presentation last night, they were talking about, you know, spun fibres giving off more microfiber loss than filament. And then we move on to yarn, many different spinning types. Again, you know, directly related to the raw material that kind of goes into it, you know, the spinning types can have a huge effect on the fibers that come out. As far as I can see on the landscape at the moment, there hasn't been a huge amount of work looking specifically at this area. And I think it would be an interesting area to look at. But I think what we need to do is we need to move the conversation and move the understanding from looking just at, you know, what is the competition, you know, is it a fleece or is it not a fleece, but actually start to ask these questions. You know, when we start to understand what impacts our fabrics are making, is look back at our fabric specs and try and understand a little bit more about how they've been put together. When we look at fabrics, you know, on this diagram here, we've put woven, non-woven, weft knit and warp knit. But I think to date, the core of the work has been done on weft knit fabrics. Again, a lot of that was started with the fleece fabric constructions and in the early kind of understandings that we had. But I think as we start to get a much better handle on, you know, how the fibres are coming out and what fabrics they're coming out of, we might actually find that there's more information we can get from understanding it, perhaps a tighter knit construction, for example. Is that, you know, has it got more abrasion because the fibres are closer together, for example? So I think, you know, we should be able to get to a position where we've got a much clearer understanding of what each fabric type is actually doing. And I think if we step back to a few slides ago where I talked about test method, you know, now that we're getting to a position where we've got a consistent test methodology, we should get to a position where we can start to review results that are coming in from specific materials. The microfiber consortium that I work in, we've actually released a test method to 30 plus of our members with the idea that they will start to test the materials within their material portfolios and really get an understanding of which ones are giving out the greater number of fibers. And I think when we can start to look at that and we can kind of map it back then through this infographic, we can start to see if there's any kind of correlations between fabric construction or spinning types or raw materials that go into it. And that's when this, to me, really gets really quite exciting. Although I shouldn't say that because it's not necessarily an exciting topic because it's a massive challenge. But when we've got that data that we can start to map across this, then it's going to become a lot clearer for us to see, okay, you know, we're getting consistency in this area with this fabric construction, or, you know, we're getting consistency here. And then that becomes easier for us as a collective industry to make that collective change through textile engineering choices. So, you know, I feel very positive that we can actually get there, but I can't stand up here today and say that we've got all the answers and we can do that today. But I think it's through this kind of collaborative effort that we will actually get to that position. If we move on to colour, this to me is a really interesting one. And you can see that the green circles show up in four different places there. So in the main, we know that fabrics are coloured in piece form after fabric construction. But there are also cases where we can solution dye, yarn dye, or garment dye. So the dyeing comes up in very different parts of the process. So, and because of that, different amounts of water are used, the fabric goes under different processing conditions. So when you think back to domestic laundering and you think about how many fibres are released through just domestic, you know, washing that we do at home, if you scale that up and then you put it in the massive vessel in a production facility, you're still putting water in, you're putting temperature, you're putting time, and you're putting chemicals in, and you're agitating the fabric. It's kind of, to me, a no-brainer that fibres are going to come out during the coloration process as well. And understanding that, you know, these different coloration types have different amounts of water or processing or whatever, I think for me it's really interesting to try and understand what sort of impact the coloration is actually playing on the end fabrics. So that's a piece of work that we're also undertaking at the moment to really try and get a handle on that. Because if we find out that, you know, one method is better than another, then that's something that we all need to know about. We need to know how we can, you know, inform our development teams to actually make those informed decisions. But again, you know, this is work in progress. We haven't got the results today. But I think these are all questions that we should be asking, you know, just trying to piece all these bits of information together. And then the other one I wanted to talk about was finishing. You know, a very complex area covering chemical finishes, mechanical finishes, hybrid finishes. But again, you know, when we see these reports that say X number of fibres have come out of an acrylic garment, and we don't even know if that's a single jersey or if it's a fleece or, you know, knitted or whatever, then it's very difficult for us to actually understand really why those fibres are coming out. And to me, it's not purely saying it's the acrylic's fault. It's the combined fault of that total fabric. And a lot of understanding needs to be drawn from this, you know, so we can kind of apply it to how we go forwards. We're already seeing people, you know, making changes, making, you know, fabric development changes to try and navigate around what would be traditionally seen as a high brushed and cropped sort of fabric. And then also I wanted to touch on garments. So, okay, I'm talking here today about textile engineering, but I did want to touch on this because when we think about how we put our garments together, we know that the majority of our products are still cut and sewn in traditional ways. There's various different joining methods, and then we do have a proportion of our production that comes through seamless. And it really came home to me when I was playing around in the office with this garment here, just cutting it up, and also knowing what's happening when we're cutting samples and preparing them for the testing that we're actually doing. certain fabrics with particularly loose constructions, the amount of fibres that come off, and I'm not going to pull too much off here, just when you cut it, absolute handfuls of fibres come out. And if you think about, you know, this is just a tiny little garment, you multiply that by the many, many thousands of pieces in that production line every day of the year, et cetera, et cetera. The amount of fibres that are released, whether they're inhaled by the workers, you know, that they're brushed into extraction systems somewhere, or they're washed through the floor, that is a massive risk, you know, and that's not textile engineering, that's garment manufacture. And I'm not saying that we can totally switch over to totally seamless production or laser joining or anything like that. But I think it's all things that we need to be mindful of. And I think, you know, you guys are out in the supply base. You guys are out in the supply base all the time. And I think it's really important that you become the eyes and ears and the voice of this work collectively. If you see something and you can obviously see fibres coming out, then ask that question of the suppliers. You know, I think the conversations I've had with the suppliers, and I can see a number of them in the audience, which is really great, is they're very proactive to making these changes. They just need to understand, you know, what we require. So, and also they need to understand it from a collective voice. You know, if they're getting 101 different requests and they're all slightly different, and then that becomes a really blurred message. So let's be consistent on what we're asking them. But I think there's quite a lot of opportunity here to actually look at with regards to garment construction. So what I want to do now is just switch gears a little bit and talk about the work of the Outdoor Microfiber Consortium. So as I said at the beginning, I started this work in 2016, you know, really interested in looking at how we could re-engineer things. The interest for that work grew phenomenally, and over the last couple of years, we've actually formed that into the Outdoor Microfiber Consortium. And that was supported by the European Outdoor Group, so EOG. We're now in a position where we've got over 30 brands and retailers and suppliers within our remit, and I can see a number of you in the audience today, so thank you for coming along. But what that does, it gives us a collaborative industry response to a challenge that not any of us could actually do alone. You know, even the biggest brands can't actually tackle this project on their own, because you need to have this kind of consistent understanding. I mean, if you think back to that infographic, so many different parts of that puzzle, and I think if we tried to do it on our own, you know, we just don't have the impact. So the consortium actually facilitates a brand and retail and supplier approach. So we're kind of aligning as far as our agenda, which really expedites that research. And I think what we've been able to do is we've been able to start that research in academia. We've been able to then switch some of the research to our supply base, which, if you think about the whole time frame, enables us to speed things up considerably. So some of the academic projects can be anything between 1 and 4 years. We then need that translation period where we translate that to our suppliers. They then need to come up to speed with it. By the time we've got product at retail, we've really lost quite a lot of time. So if we can take some of those research understandings into our supply base, we're actually empowering them with the information that they need to make product development changes. And I think what's been really exciting there is to go in with a challenge and see results that we're getting back from suppliers. And before I've even asked the question, some of the suppliers have come back and said, oh, actually, we've already had our R&D team work on that, and here are some proposals for you. And I wouldn't say we're yet at a position where some of those proposals are commercially viable, but it really shows me how, by empowering our suppliers with this challenge, we're actually expediting this for all of us. So I think that's really positive. I think also the other thing that I really want to stress with the consortium is it has really been pinnacle in pushing forwards this standardized test methodology. So one of the first pieces of work we did was actually commission Leeds University to develop a test method. And then through the work of EOG, working with the cross-industry agreement to make sure that the test methodology that we were developing aligned with Europe, aligned with America. And that has really been pinnacle in driving our agenda as well. So I think now that that methodology has been rolled out to our brands and retailers, as we saw before, we can start to get an understanding of where the high-risk fabrics are really coming through, where they're coming through consistently from the members within our organisation. And then we can make sure that our agenda, and we work to a 3-year strategy in the consortium, really addresses these key points. And so I'm really excited about how this has come about, the progress that we're actually making. And if anybody's interested, I would encourage you to just come up and talk to me afterwards. So I'm going to leave it at that, but thank you very much for your time and your attention, and I just encourage you to continue asking the questions, ask the difficult questions, really engage your teams in it, and if you want any more information, this is where you can find me. So thank you very much. I think we've got some time for questions as well, so if anybody's got any questions.
Hi, my name is Christina. I'm coming from Philippa K. And I'm wondering, have you ever tested materials that have been coated, you know, with this waterborne PU or other coatings, how it looks like with the shedding?
Okay, I haven't personally tested, but that's an interesting one. I think there are some organisations that are testing with some chemical finishes, trying to see whether actually applying topical finishes would actually prevent microfibers coming off. And I think there are some technologies that are coming through. I think what I would encourage people to do is, if you're seeing that, if you're interested in it, putting it through the standardized test methodology so we can actually align it to the other work that's going on. But I think, you know, keep coming back to the kind of baseline textile development. I think the most that we can do without having to put a lot of chemistry on, because if we are getting fiber loss coming off, the last thing we want is fiber loss coming off attached to chemistry that then becomes another sustainability issue for us. So this is where, you know, it is a truly complex topic and there's many different approaches. But I think with the understanding that we have today on the whole array of sustainability issues, we just have to be really careful that we're not solving one by, you know, creating another one.
Thank you, Sophie, for the presentation. It was very interesting. Have you guys also looked at the waterless dyeing and the impact of that?
The Hohenstein?
No, the CO2, waterless dyeing?
It is part of one of our projects, yes. Okay. But I can't disclose too much more information in that at the moment. But yeah, I think that is an interesting one for me, because if we're not putting the fabrics through a wet coloration process, then yes, there's not so much agitation, there's not so much fiber loss through water from a factory. But yeah, good question, thanks.
Hi, I just wanted to know if you had an idea of time frame for results that can actually be studied and read by most people, and when we might have a solution.
When we might have a solution, my goodness. Yeah, that is a that's a really difficult question. The consortium is actively working to a 3-year strategy. We don't want to work to anything longer than that, because we want to make sure that we try and get to an industry conclusion. Whether we will be able to do that in a 3-year time frame, we don't know. The consortium works slightly different from some of the academic projects that can't release information through the work. What we're trying to do is, we're member-based, so our information goes primarily to our paid members. In certain cases where the members agree, we can release that information publicly. And as information is coming out, I mean, for example, I think it was yesterday, Ecotextile News reported on some findings that we had from the Leeds work. So although that's not in an academic paper, that's in a news report, people can get hold of that. And I think we're very keen that as much information that can go public, we will release in a bit-by-bit situation. So there's no actual academic papers that are coming out of our organisation, but we are trying to make sure that as much as possible is publicly available. 3 years from January, actually, we're setting our new strategy in January. Yeah.
Thank you, Sophie. My question is regarding the domestic washing. What's your opinion on the washing bags that, like, Gary, I forgot the name, but there are a few, like, coral ball.
The coral ball, guppy bag, things like that. I think what they have done to me is they've really raised awareness. They've been fantastic at raising awareness at the consumer level. I mean, just to give you an example, in the UK, there's an organisation called the Women's Institute, and there's 220,000 active women in the UK that are part of this organisation. When they heard about the Cora Ball, I think pretty much 98% of them, from what I heard, went out and tried to order the Cora Ball. So they were actively wanting to engage in this and really become part of creating change. So that made them feel good, you know, because they could physically see it, they could put it in their washing machine and say, oh, great, job's done, we've done our bit. They're not textile nerds like us. They don't work in the industry. They don't understand the complexities that we do. I think we need to have a portfolio approach. I think no one is going to give totally all the answers that you need. Yeah, it's a good start, but I would say let's not rely heavily on them. I think yesterday in the BSI presentation, I don't know if you were in it, but I think when we're talking about the filtering size that we're actually using when we're testing, and then you look at the filter kind of size in the bags or, you know, the corable, they're very different. And I think the other thing that concerns me is the more that we understand about the project and know now that it's not just microfibers that are coming out of a certain dimension and actually microfragments that we don't always know how small they are. You know, a corable, for example, is that going to catch a microfragment? You know, we have to be careful that we really are addressing, you know, the real deep kind of stuff that's coming out here. But yeah.
Thanks for the presentation. It's perfectly matching to what I proposed. Regarding the devices that you put in your washing machine, there's just a study out that the effect is quite limited. And as an analogy, this is kind of like cleaning up the open ocean. Mm. It makes you feel well, but the effect is unfortunately relatively limited. You get something out, but this is not the main fraction, as you pointed out.
Yeah. But I think, you know, without those, I wouldn't be as far as I am on the work that we're doing and the work that we're doing as a consortium, because they're very tangible things. You can see them. And I think before they came out, before they really were widely known about, people were still only worried about floating plastics that they could see, you know, at the top of oceans or when they go swimming. And for consumers to really understand the invisible thing that's happening. Yeah. Sorry, can you hear me? Yeah, okay. So for the consumers to understand the visible thing, the guppy bag, the corable, and all those sorts of things have made it really easy now for me to engage with people and get people to come into a conversation and say, yes, I get it. Whereas before, trying to get people to understand what I was even talking about was really quite difficult. Another question at the back?
Hi. You just touched on fiber releases where chemistry is involved. Hmm. Is there anything within the kind of study about, because obviously within the outdoor industry, there are so many things where we add things to make for performance. Are those things being studied as well in terms of...
You mean like chemical finishes for like DWR
moisture
management?
Yeah.
I don't know of anything that's specifically after those chemistries, but we do know that the microfibers that are coming off are acting as chemical carriers. And I think from some of the work that you spoke about before is, you know, they are preventing even the natural fibres from biodegrading as we would have anticipated. And I think this was always the assumption that we had. I think when people first started talking about natural fibres and, oh, it's okay, my first reaction was, but we load them with chemistry. So whether it's a natural fibre or it's a synthetic fibre, I think any chemistry that we put on is going to be an issue. But I think, you know, when you think back to that infographic, there's so many areas that we need to understand. I don't know if that's really answered your question, but we don't know enough, basically. We don't know enough.
Hi. As engineers, how do you have any suggestions on how we can motivate product developers with this, when it often comes back to price, design and function as being the first things?
I think that's one of the driving factors of the consortium, actually, is, you know, we're very mindful that the product developers need to have the information, need to have the tools. That's on our agenda, it's on our roadmap, but what we don't want to do is we don't want to create tools ahead of having all the correct information, because if we educate developers and then 6 months later we're like, oh, we made a mistake there and we've got some new research, we don't want to then have to go back and change it. So we have mapped out what this could potentially look like, and we're just needing to make sure that we've got a bit more data into it. And I think that change will come when we start to get the actual real-time data from the testing results that will come back. I mean, if you think, you know, I think at the moment we're probably at about 35 brands within our consortium. If each one of those then goes and takes the test method and tests the materials in their collections, then we're very quickly getting to that understanding that we can then use to inform product developers. But yeah, that is my key driver here, because without empowering the product developers, we will see no change at the product level on the shop floor. So, yeah. Okay, well, I'm around if people want to see me later. If not, my contact details are there. But thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you for listening to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. To get your free ticket for the next fair or listen to other expert talks, go to www.performancedays.com. Copyright November 2018 by Design and Development GmbH Textile Consult. All rights are reserved.